The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Well, I don't know about that.
You're right on track with this. You're right on track.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
Everybody make a mistake.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are so wrong.
You're so wonderful.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Someone intelligent on the radio. Yay!
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I was reading in Catholic Radio Today, the March issue. They basically said, don't complain on radio about your own life. Well, I'm going to break that rule. I'm very tired today. Normally, I try to get enough sleep. Last night, I had to go out. I had one of those good hair days, and I didn't want to just stay at home with my hair looking like that. So when you have a good hair day, you got to go out. And I stayed out, oh, man, had to be 9 o'clock, 9:15, yeah, before I came home and just collapsed. But I'll do my very best today to give you an energetic presentation. Number to get onto the program, my call screamer today will be my producer man, Andrew Kruchek. He will take your calls at 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. I truly welcome your calls. I know a lot of people. The number one reason, if I can believe my email, ePersons, the people don't call is because they say somebody will recognize my voice because people I know listen. Now, come on. I mean, when I have a listening audience of 185 people, the odds, that's like what, 3.5 per state? That's not, they're not going to be listening. Some say I get nervous and I don't know if I can make the call to those people. I say relax, psychological approach. Some people say that I'm just not sure how to condense it into some short presentation. I'll do that for you. I'll cut it down. Not a problem. So I really do want to hear from you. And sometimes you don't have to call about a particular problem in your life. I'm a psychologist. That's what I do for a living. That's my professional career here on the radio, of course. I'm not doing therapy and I'm not doing diagnosis. I'm just educating, doing what I can to help you look at life a little differently, a little better. Sometimes you call in, you give good suggestions to other people. That's great. Sometimes you have just generic questions. We had a question yesterday, and the gentleman dropped. And I've always wondered why that is. People will call in, and then within 2 minutes, they're gone, which I suspect most calls come from cell phones. So that can be erratic and unpredictable. Forget exactly. Oh, I know what his question was. He says the plethora, he didn't use the word plethora, I did, the cornucopia, I use that word too, of therapists. You got counselors, you got social workers, you have psychologists. Is there a difference? And I was chomping at the bit to answer that question, and he came and went. Well, maybe he had to go to his therapist. I don't know. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get on to the program. Definitely want to hear from you. A lot of people, especially those who want to be faithful disciples of Christ, get frustrated by looking around them and seeing others who are either disrespectful of the faith, in mass even, neglectful of the faith, so anxious to get out of mass, they leave. Right after the homily. Not quite, but it seems like it. get more of those on the Saturday Mass than you do on Sunday. They get upset looking around and seeing the lessening numbers of people who embrace the faith, or of those in the faith, the lukewarmness toward it all, the picking and choosing of morality. And this is a source of frustration for them. I'll give you a paradigm shift that may help your frustration. If you know what a paradigm shift is, a completely different way of looking at things. Completely, across the board. Next time you're in Mass and you're watching somebody pay no attention to Mass, or sadly they're even on their cell phone. I've seen that. I saw somebody once go up to receive communion and pulled out their phone in the line. And you get upset. You get frustrated. You start to think, what's wrong with them? What they realize? Here's a very different way to look at it. What you know, how you take it more seriously, more faithfully, is a gift. You've gotten that. When you look at someone else who neglects the faith, rejects the faith, many of you have adult children who have left the faith, and it's a source of very much frustration for you. What if you changed your look and you said, I feel very sad for them. I feel very bad. They don't know. I know. I've had my eyes opened. I see that this is infinitely important. And they don't. Instead of being frustrated with them, I'm going to feel sad for their situation. Now, we're not talking pity. We're not talking put down. We're talking genuine sadness. Now, obviously, it doesn't have to dominate your day. I don't mean it like that. But I mean, if you look at the people in Mass who don't seem to be paying much attention or don't seem to be taking it very seriously or who leave early and you get all frustrated, say to yourself, thank you, Lord, that I know what I know, and that you have helped me get closer to you. That's the prayer to make. Not the fact that I'm looking at those people and what's wrong with them. Or all around us in the world. So many are hostile to the faith and neglect the faith. So instead of being upset about it, maybe you could be a little sad about it. That helps me. And it helps me be grateful too, because the more people who are paying no attention to the faith in our lives or in the world in general or even in the church, the more grateful you should be that you know what you know, that you've been given the faith you've been given. That's huge. As less and less people embrace the faith, and you're one of them that does, your gratitude should rise rather than your frustration. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call. Got some good calls up there. Load them up. Andrew's ready. Wake him up. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray.
The doctor is in. Now, don't you feel better?
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
And now, The EWTN Family Prayer with Father Joseph.
Family, a prayer that we pray together is a powerful prayer. So please pray together with me, our EWTN Family Prayer. Today we pray for the caregivers of the sick. O Most Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, we adore you. You have first loved us, and through your Son you have taught us the excellence of self-giving love. Give to those who are caregivers of a sick parent or child, brother or sister, the assistance of your holy angels. Lessen their burdens and give them great joy in practicing a work of mercy. And since charity is never forgotten by you, reveal to them their heavenly reward. Amen.
Underwritten in part by this not-for-profit.
Are you looking for peace? Longing for joy? Want to meet the giver of all goodness? God is calling the laity to bring Ignatian prayer into the suffering world. Work for the new evangelization. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com. Order your free digital training and manual. Find true happiness and everlasting joy. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com
and click on the red button today.
It's free. Approved by the USCCB.
Thank you. I said that I very much appreciate you folks calling in, and you did. It's a whole bunch of you. Now, the one good thing about that, especially if you're calling from, well, any phone really has a speaker setting, so you can just put it on speaker and go about your business, whatever you have to do. You're not tied to a corded phone like I was the many years of my young life. You just put it on speaker, and I'm going to do everything I can to get to all of you. Mary Jo from Kentucky. This is a book question. Of course, I jump. She hung up. All right. That's once again, kind of reminds me of my college days. I'd call a girl. As soon as I said, hello, this is Ray, they hang up. Maria from Pennsylvania. Hi, Maria.
Hello.
How are you, dear?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Okay. You're kind of faint on your phone there. Is there some way we can get you a little louder?
Let me try. I'm driving. Let me try the audio to... Okay. Is that better?
Yeah. Oh, you're very good now. Thank you. How old are your adopted children?
The one is a freshman in college, and the other one is will be 12 in this year.
Which one wants to meet birth mom?
Dr. A?
Yes, ma'am. You there? Hello, Maria. Do we lose?
Dr. A?
Yes, ma'am. Are you there?
Okay. Now I can hear you.
Alrighty. Now, which one wants to meet birth mom?
Oldest one.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to do about it?
This actually happened a little while ago, and I was not ready for it because I didn't think he was ready for it. It was in the middle of his senior year, applying to colleges, big change coming ahead, and... I didn't think it was a good idea.
Okay.
So I actually called Catholic counselors and this is why I want to hear your opinion too. You know, we kind of let it lie. Like we figured, okay, we'll just see if he brings it up again. So I'm really calling you because I'm trying to prepare for the day when he does bring it up again. Because he's angry. And even though we've tried to explain to him that, you know, short of dying for your child, this is what we believe, that this is probably one of the greatest sacrifices a parent can do. And he almost wants to, my impression is that he wants to talk to them and say, you know, how could you be so irresponsible? And he's angry. And, you know, I'm just
he wants to let her have it.
For that.
He wants to let her have it.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Did you ask him? Is that what you want to do? Do you want to question her? You want to critique her? You want to make her feel bad?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the gist that I got.
Well, there's a couple. Go ahead, dear. There's a couple things to look at.
So I went on, and I'm like, well, has life been bad for you? And he's like, oh no, you know, I'm, you know, and he went on to say, you know, he's blessed and everything, but I don't know. So I'm just trying to be prepared. I'm just calling you to get fodder, to be prepared for when he is going to bring it up again. You know, because I'm sure he will. Maybe not. I don't know.
The assumption.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Maria, the assumption is that his birth mother wants to be found.
We brought that up too.
Yeah, I think that's always a question. I've talked to a lot of birth moms who have placed their children for adoption many, many years ago. And they don't want to reunite, not because they have any kind of neglect or hostility toward their birth child, but because they recognize their birth child has a life, their birth child has a family. They don't want to complicate the situation. They made that decision, as you say, out of love, and they moved on with life. So that's the first thing I think you ought to tell him. What makes you think that she wants to be reunited in some way? There is a registry in my state, I don't know about Pennsylvania, and basically you can look and see if the birth parent is on that registry, that in okay. fact I'm available to reconnect if the child, when reaches the age of majority, wants to reconnect. We had a couple of our children, two of the ten, express some kind of reconnection when they became age of majority. The one didn't work out at all. Oh my, that reunification. Oh my, they just ran as far as they could run. The other one still has contact, but it's very fragile in a lot of ways. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, if he brings it up, you could say, well, okay, because you're 19 or you're 18 or 20, we can have you do this, but if your motive is to just excoriate, well, you don't have to use that word. He probably doesn't know what it means anyway. He's getting a college education. They don't teach grammar anymore. If your motive is to attack your birth mom, we're not going to help you do that. We're just not going to help you do that. So at this point, you might want to say to him, if you're going to, out of curiosity or whatever's motivating you to do this, we got to make sure your motive is good to get our help. That'd be my approach.
Okay.
Okie dokie.
That's great. Thanks, doctor.
All right, Maria. Thank you, dear. I appreciate it. Let's see what we got here. Did that come back? No, she didn't come back. Where was she at? All right, let's real quick. I can answer this one real quick. Hilda from Houston, Texas is saying, why do you say 877-57-EQUAL? Is that your question, Hilda?
Yes, it is.
It's easy to remember. If I say 877-573-7825, you're going to have to hear that more than once to remember it. Those numbers bounce all.
Yeah, but I don't know what equal means. What does equal mean? Why would you even use equal?
Because it was the best word to capture those numbers. 877-573-7825. So you got 37825. Equal fits those numbers. There may be other words. I just never searched for them.
Well, it wouldn't have given me the correct phone number. I had to wait several days to hear what the heck equal meant.
Oh, no. All you have to do is just take the letters. For example, let me look at my phone here for a second. Okay. Here. Let me dial this up here. In other words, equal E is 3. So that's the first digit that's missing. 573. Q is 7. You know how to do that, don't you?
Yeah, well. Yes, but I don't really want to decode a phone number.
Well, if you God bless you, if you can remember 877-573-7825, go for it. I just give people options.
I just wrote it down.
Okay.
A lot simpler.
Well, thank you. You call anytime using 877-573-7825. Thanks, Hilda. All righty, dear. Bye. Oh, boy. Got some heavy ones up there. Well, let's go to Stephanie from Houston. She has a 14-year-old granddaughter who is just deciding, okay, the world's horrible. The world's going to die in 6 years, and I'm not going to bring kids into this world just to have the climate collapse on them. Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
What's her reason, this 14-year-old granddaughter, for not wanting children when she gets big?
Well, I believe she said, I don't want to have to birth anything. I think maybe it's just a fear of giving birth.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just torn to say, okay, well, you'll change your mind. You're only 14. I mean, I'm not sure what the appropriate response. She goes, so does that mean I can't get married in the church? So.
Well, of course, you can be practical. You can say, we certainly have medications where you don't feel anywhere near the kind of pain of natural childbirth. You tell her that, right? That's the first thing. However, in one of my books, and I forget which one it was that I talked about this, the percentage of young people now saying they don't want children is at an all-time high.
Wow.
I think there's a lot of reasons for this. I think part of it is the culture demeans having more than 1.86 children. I think that we've become much more self-centered and parenting is a sacrificial vocation. I think also, and if you look at the stats, this is a frightening stat. I forget what percentage of young people under, I forget what age, 30, believe that the world is not going to be here.
Oh, no.
It's awful. It's awful. They have been convinced that the world is going to cease to exist because we're in such a climate crisis that we're all just going to die. Yeah, it's absolutely frightening what they've done. Horrible. So given that, I talk about the number of people who say, we don't want kids. We don't want kids. And I say to them, well, if you're just looking around you and you're seeing bratty kids, or you're seeing the sacrifices that people make, or you're afraid the world's not going to be here for your kids, you can't know that decision until if and when you have a child. I can't count how many people have said to me, I was never really excited about babies at all until I had my own. And then all of a sudden it became the center of the world. So I wouldn't worry too much about that 14-year-old at this point saying, I don't want to have kids, because she doesn't really know what she's talking about. And
yeah, I don't want to say that to her. Well, you don't know what you're talking about.
No, well,
you're too young to decide that.
Well, yeah, she is. And I think maybe you could say it to her more gently. You could say something like, well, honey, I think as you get older, you'll look at this and you'll realize that kids bring a lot to life. And especially if you have a child, you will completely fall in love with that child. That child becomes the center of your world.
Well, there's also some trauma. Her mother had a stillbirth full term. So I think that probably weighs in a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Because she's the risk. But you could tell her that at least at this point in human history, childbirth is safer than it's ever been, ever. For much of human history, childbirth or children up to age 5 was, the survival rate was less than it is now, that's for sure. All righty, my dear. This is Dr. A. A lot of folks up there and a lot of folks I want to talk to.
What is wrong with artificial birth control? The Catholic Catechism explains that it unnaturally breaks the bond between the two essential elements of the conjugal act, the unitive and the procreative. The unitive element is the mutual self-giving of the spouses to one another. The procreative element is the openness to the act's potential and natural end, life. The truth of marital love is falsified when we separate what God has decreed as inherent and inseparable to the marriage act. We don't unnaturally separate eating from its natural end, nourishment. When we wish to control our weight, we abstain from food. Thus, if for just reasons we wish to control birth during a fertile period, we should abstain from sexual relations. In an age of ecological awareness, church-approved natural family planning, which is both healthy and free, is cause for environmental applause. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Do you know what your diocese, what your church, what your parish is doing to help families in need? Women who feel they're in a desperate situation and for whatever reason, God forbid, may consider abortion. This is not difficult. The information is out there. We have to become more aware, and we have to be willing to not only know about what's available, but to do something about the issues. It's not just up to, quote unquote, the church. We're all part of the church, and we're all called to put our faith into action, or else we will be guilty of having a dead faith, as St. James reminds us. So first things, be aware, and then be willing to do something.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Thank you so much for joining me. It's Dr. Ray Guarini, program Doctor Is In. True privilege to get to do this. True privilege. I get more from you folks than you get from me. There's no doubt about that. Jack is calling from the D.C. area. Has a daughter who has tried to hurt herself. Matter of fact, tried to kill herself. Things seem to be deteriorating again. Hi, Jack. Hate to say it that way. That gets you in trouble when you say, hi, Jack. How old is your daughter?
She's 15 now. She was 4 when we got a divorce, and I think that has a lot to do with it. And I don't know. She had a bunch of friends in, you know, first kindergarten, first grade and stuff, and she was, you know, very happy. Punchy, smart, bright little kid, you know, pretty sensitive. But after the divorce, I noticed the change, and I tried to see him, you know, every other weekend, the visitation type thing anyway. But
so you're not raising her.
I guess she got in with some other kids that were, you know, kids of divorced parents. And anyway, some of the kids on the bus were cutting themselves, and she got caught up into that, and I don't know if she started it or whether she, I think she was following anyway. She got kind of stigmatized, and you know, the school found out about it, and everybody found out about it. The school didn't even try to hush it up or anything. And anyway, so she lost all her friends, and she was kind of stigmatized for the next couple of years. And then, after elementary school, a few years of that, she, you know, I don't know, she'll probably hear this from my wife, but she tried to hang herself in the shower half-heartedly, and so she got, you know, she got the attention, and she got help, and I don't know, it's just been a few years, and I never get straight answers out of my ex or her. I try not to broach the subject when I see her, because I don't know all the ins and outs, and I don't push her, and she doesn't volunteer much.
So you're trying to influence this child, Jack, when you're not raising her.
Yeah, and, you know, the first time she went into one of those facilities for a week or whatever it was, I came in and I gave her a little prayer book, and I told her, you know, a few things, and I I said it in a nice way, but I mentioned that, you know, hey, if you kill yourself, you know, I didn't say it quite like that, but, you know, it's kind of a one-way ticket to the bad place. And I've heard
can you talk to your family since. Can you talk to your ex-wife about this?
I talked to her yesterday when she told me after she was admitted again Monday, and I talked to her yesterday because I got a bunch of she's skipping class texts from the school. So I'm like, hey, what's up? Is she sick? And she told me that she's back in the facility.
Would you say that your ex-wife has had a real difficult time raising her?
Well, she works, and yeah, I guess. Yeah, I would say, I mean, she has friends, family, and support, but for the most part, I think she's left alone a lot. And,
does your daughter have a therapist?
She's not close to her sister. She's not close to her brother.
Does your daughter have a therapist?
Yes. Yes. She has a school counselor. She's got a therapist. She's got the help.
So,
and everything. I mean, they had her on all kinds of various medications.
Let me jump in here because we're gonna bump up against a break. You will then probably have to ask your wife if you can have a more active role in your daughter's life.
No, that's pretty much probably not going to happen. I mean, I'm...
She won't let you?
You know your what daughter, I mean?
Your daughter won't visit you?
My ex-wife hates my guts, so...
Oh, boy.
And, you know...
Will your daughter visit you?
Have gotten estranged through the years, too.
Jack, will your daughter visit you?
No. I tried to get her to visit, but she'll go have lunch with me and stuff like that.
Okay, well, then
do that.
Okay. That's really what you can do.
I don't know. I just got it. I'm more religious now. I was raised Catholic and tried to raise the kids Catholic somewhat, but I didn't make them go to church all the time. Didn't make them go to. So only made one of them go to CCD. Right,
I'm gonna let you go here because this is a very complex situation that you really have no power. She doesn't want to see you. Your ex-wife basically probably poisons her against you. So, and she already has a therapist, and she's already spent some time in an inpatient. So this sounds like a very discontented young lady with life. And there's just a ton of those out there right now. If you look at the statistics, the teens and young adults are at depressive rates and anxiety rates higher than ever recorded. Now, there's a lot of reasons for this, and there's no doubt in my mind that your daughter has probably had a smartphone for the last several years, which is certainly not a help. So given all that, I think the one thing you can do is spend a little more time, if you can, going out to lunch with her, talking with her, seeing what's going on in her life. Because every other way, her mother is raising her, and you have very little input on a day-to-day basis anyway on that. Okay, thank you. Mary from St. Louis, her daughter's high school, which is Catholic, is asking the daughter to leave. Hi, Mary.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for taking the call.
Sure.
I do appreciate it. I never thought I would get through. So
I'm glad you did.
Yeah, exactly. And I know you have 10 kids. So,
why are they asking her to leave, Mary?
She was adopted from another country at 18 months and has done very, very well. But unfortunately, she's a junior at the school now. Freshman year, she threatened to commit suicide. We then had her go through that IOP, intensive outpatient, that summer. And then sophomore year, she didn't make it on a team, and that was hard, but she did okay. Then she didn't make it on a spring team, and that was tough too, but she got through it okay. Junior year, she seemed to be doing okay. We had her established with a psychiatrist and a therapist. But, you know, unfortunately, you kind of take what you get with adolescent psychiatry. So they were doing okay. She was on medication. She was taking it, although sometimes she found out she was pocketing it, which obviously doesn't do much good then. So we've got her, I thought, more stable, but she's been cutting. She then fell with a it was kind of a silly teenage accident where she fell. She hit her head. When she got to the ER,
Mary, why did the high school ask her to leave?
Because of the fact she's been cutting. Because of the fact that she drank energy drinks. She drank an energy drink and passed out at school. They had to call 911. They felt it was very traumatic for the other girls. Then the next day,
they don't think they can handle her. The high school doesn't think they can handle her.
They're saying more therapy. They feel she needs more services. The problem is...
Stay there. We ran up against break here, Mary. You stay right there. We'll talk a few minutes after we come back. This is Dr. Ray. Thanks for joining me.
From God, Father Mitch Pacwa shares his experience.
I certainly had a bit of opposition. My father wasn't pleased with this at all, and he kept arguing with me. Once when I was 12, he said to me, what do you want to be a priest for? Why don't you be a doctor? You don't have to be a priest to help people. You can be a doctor and get married, have kids. And I said to him then, Dad, if I was a doctor and I help people get better, that would be very good. But later on, they're going to die anyway. So if I'm a priest and I hear somebody's confession and they go to heaven, that lasts forever. So that's better. And he didn't know what to say. And he continued to oppose the idea over the next years. Yet that didn't stop me. And even when he said, I'm going to disinherit you if you become a priest. And on the day of my first Mass, he did. But as I also said to him then, he told me, okay, you're out of my will. I said, Dad, I can't keep it anyway. It doesn't matter. I'm a Jesuit, and we can't keep the money, so it really doesn't affect me. The issue is I'm trying to follow what God, our Lord, is asking of me. And this has been where I have found the greatest joy, that doing what I believe through my own prayer and through reflection and thinking about it and moving from a little boy's idea of what a priest would be like all the way to now in my early 50s, you know, realizing that this is exactly what I think is going to please God the most. And that's what I want to do, to please God.
For information on the priesthood or religious life, log on to www.ewtn.com/religious-life.
Thank you very much for joining me, Dr. Ray Grandy, program Dr. Zinn. Talking to Mary from St. Louis. She got a daughter who was adopted at 18 months from another country. Her Catholic high school is saying, your daughter is presenting some emotional behavior problems that we can't handle. And not only that, but it's having an effect on some of the other kids. Still there, Mary?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So are they adamant? Are they saying, really, she must leave because we can't handle her?
That's what they're saying, and we were planning to honor that because what happened was she had self-harmed, not at school, but self-harmed back in December and had sutures. Then the next day, during a final, pulled off the dressing for some odd reason, and then either she had taken out the sutures or the sutures came out. She's never fessed up on that.
That's a pretty deep cut.
Yeah, I mean, it was superficial on the upper arm, but still, they had to do the sutures, obviously. And the nurse felt that was very traumatizing.
So then she has a therapist. She has a therapist, right? Okay.
Well, she doesn't like her therapist, so we're switching to a different therapist, different psychiatrist. Actually, tomorrow is the first appointment with the new psychiatrist.
Good.
The one left.
Okay. So you're getting some good help. So what is your main concern in all this?
We were going to switch her to a different school. I'd prefer her go to a smaller school, but she's thinking of going back to the huge public school where she went till eighth grade. And that's what her plan was, but then she keeps saying that she really wants to go back to the high school where she has been, which is an all-girls. They have been very good up until now. They really have. They said, you know, it's very traumatizing for the other kids because what happened was she drank an energy drink at school and passed out. They had to shut down the hall, call 911, and they took her away. She went to school the next day, and somehow, which we don't give them to her, she drank another energy drink.
The school is saying that we can't have her back, and your daughter is saying, well, I want to go back. That's the gist of it, right?
Right. And right. The nurse is saying, well, she needs to be in patient psych. No, she's already been in patient psych. And it's not the nurse's decision.
Are they putting conditions on it, Mary? Are they saying if she does A, B, C, and D, we will continue to try to work with her? Are they saying that?
No.
Okay. So they're saying, no, we can't handle her. Okay. I think you got to be straight with your daughter then. You got to be straight with your daughter. Say, honey, they are saying, according to as they size it up, they are saying that these things that are happening, they don't know how to handle it. They can't handle it. So therefore, we have no choice. We've got to pick another school. And you as a mother have to decide, Mary, what you think is the best place for her. And if you say, well, she wants to go back to the public high school, and you as a mother say, that's where a lot of these problems started, then you got to make a decision. Maybe get some good guidance from the therapist, but at this point, you have to make that decision, really not knowing how it's going to play out. If you think that a smaller school is best for your daughter and you know best, then you say that's what we're going to do. She may be unhappy about that, and I don't know if in the back of your mind you're thinking, well, will she be so unhappy that she'll do something devastating like another cut or a suicide attempt? And then on the other hand, if you say, well, we send her to the public school, she'll get hooked up with, again, the same kind of kids that have led to her discontent and her self-harm. So I think if you're getting a therapist, you talk to the therapist about this. You say, okay, after you've sized up my daughter, here's what we're thinking of doing. And you tell them why. You say that, you know, a lot of these problems started in the public school. And we're nervous about sending her back there. So that's what I would suggest, Mary.
They started when she was at the private school, but she had been through a lot of trauma, unfortunately, with mental illness of my sister, my mom, who were both very mean to her. Then my older daughter had a lot of issues and was very mean to Maria to our daughter for a short period of time.
Well, Mary, these would be things that you need to bring up with the therapist. I can't step in if you're scheduled to see a therapist or you have seen a therapist, because obviously the therapist knows a lot more about it than I do. So these are things that you can share with the therapist. And a good therapist definitely will talk to mom or dad when they take on a 15-year-old who has shown some signs of discontent and self-harm. That's what I would suggest on that, Mary. Thank you. Thank you very much. Clara from Dallas, once again, it's an interesting segment of calls today, because what we've gotten is a theme, and the theme is reflecting cultural reality, which is that the ingredients that are making our teens be extremely discontent about life are all there. They are abandoning God. The culture is pushing them off in all kinds of directions. In this case with Mary's daughter, she got on a bus and a whole bunch of kids are cutting. And she decided, oh, okay, well, I'll just see what that's like, because I'm frustrated and I'm sad and I'm going to express that and hurting myself. All this is happening. And I will tell you, I've been doing this for a long time. This is the worst I've ever seen it. By far. I did not see this level of absolute discontent, misery, among young people. In fact, that period of life, teenage years, young adulthood, that period of life is naturally upbeat, naturally more zestful. And yet it has become, in our culture, with the abandonment of God, at the same time the culture has said, do it this way, and with the incredible availability of smartphones, which can destroy a soul, are all coming together and leaving parents unsure what to do and frustrated and thinking, what is going on? Thought I was just going to raise a kid, and now I'm dealing with all this kind of stuff. All right, I'll take a quick break. When we come back, Clara, this is something we can hopefully make your son look at a few things. This is Dr. Ray.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you have an insurance plan that pays for everything, even things you don't believe in? There are options. You can join Solidarity HealthShare, a faith-based health-sharing community. Plus, Solidarity HealthShare can save you money with prices starting as low as $384 a month for families.
Call to see how much you can save. 844-398-9399. That's 844-398-9399.
The church has a very high view of conscience. I think it was St. John Henry Newman who called conscience the aboriginal vicar of Christ. Catechism reads this way on conscience: the interior voice of a human being within whose heart the inner law of God is inscribed. Moral conscience is a judgment of practical reason about the moral quality of a human action. It moves a person at the appropriate moment to do good and to avoid evil. It offers some suggestions, the Ten Commandments, the moral teachings of Jesus in the Gospels, the moral teachings of St. Paul. All of these things are used as a measure of how well we're doing. It is then up to the Catholic to take a look at the teaching of the Church and to see if, in fact, they are in proper communion. The idea that you can dispense with the objective moral teachings of the Church in favor of personalized conscience is lawless and anarchic.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta for Eastern on EWTN Radio.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Have you ever been so grief-stricken and so heartsick that you can't see God? You can't see God in the tragedy. You can't see God in that cross. You can't see God in that sin. Why? You're enveloped in that grief. You're enveloped in fear. And God is out the window. You don't see Him standing right next to you.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
A rough teen calls today, and it's epidemic even in good homes. It is a culturally widespread phenomenon, and there's just a lot of ingredients. Leaving God, putting Him on a shelf, or just denying Him altogether. Social media, the cultural tsunami of this is the way you think now, this is the better way to think. This is creating a meaninglessness among our kids. It's creating a discontent that's called depression. It's creating all kinds of self-harm. Now suicide is the second leading killer of our young people. That's obscene. It's never happened. Human history, this has not happened. Clara from Dallas, her 19-year-old son has just decided that God doesn't exist. Hi, Clara. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Ray.
How did he come to this conclusion?
He said that this happened about a year ago after a big breakup with his girlfriend that was an atheist. They were both at the Catholic high school. He said he started reading things on the internet, and he decided in his head that We were all wrong. We're practicing Catholics at home, married with my husband now, what is it, 20-something years? And, I'm at a loss as to what he has a book called The God Delusion and several other
books. Yeah, it was written. That those books are nonsense. These guys are nothing but preachers. If you read those books, they're not logical, and they don't have much in the way of evidence. I forget which one wrote that book. Hitchens, maybe. I forget. There's about three or four of them that are these just incredible atheists, and they've just declared God doesn't exist. If your son is willing to read, Clara, approach him with this. First of all, is he in college?
Yes, he's a freshman at college.
Is he living at home, or did he go away to college?
He's still living at home.
Okay. Tell him, if he's going to get on the internet and read about God doesn't exist because somebody declares it, tell him to look at the evidence for a God. You got a pencil there? I'll give you some books.
Yes, I'm writing them down.
Okay. Real easy to read books. These are real easy to read paperbacks. One is called The Case for Christ.
Okay, I actually got that one for him.
Okay. There's another one called Handbook of Catholic Apologetics. Now, it sounds kind of a vague title, but it's a very, very good book. It presents logically why belief in God and in Jesus Christ as God makes sense. Makes the most sense. That's one. Here's another one he might really like if he fancies himself a really, really smart kid. It's called Is Atheism Dead? By a guy named Eric Metaxas. And he talks about, as we are becoming more aware of the science underlying the universe, it is getting harder and harder to believe that this wasn't put in motion. Tell him, rather than just reading, and by the way, Is Atheism Dead talks a lot about, there's a chapter in there where he talks about these inveterate atheist guys that write things like The God Delusion. I forget his name. Is it Hitchens or Dawkins? One of those dudes. Is it Dawkins? Okay. And Metaxas just takes him apart. He just basically tears him apart. Reasonably so. I mean, I read it. So confront your son and say, on what basis, where is your evidence that there is no God? And have you looked at the evidence that there is? Because there is. There's a lot. And for me, the biggest evidence was Christ, which is not that I believe he's God because the Bible says so, although I do, but I believe that logically the case can be made that he was who he said he was. We have a lot of reasonable evidence that says, in fact, Jesus was God. And if he looks at that evidence, logic, reason, he'd be forced to say with an open mind, you know what? There is evidence there. There really is. I chased it, Clara, when I was struggling with religion. I chased it. I looked at it. I said, I got to see the evidence here. It's very potent. It's very potent. So challenge your son. Say, you know what? I got to tell you, I'm going to make it part of my condition of me paying for your college that you look at these books. I'm not going to let you at age 19 just declare that God doesn't exist, and I'm going to turn around and pay for your college.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Part of my condition is you need to look at the other side and at the evidence rather than just simply saying, I read this book about this guy, and he's this philosopher, and he just declared God doesn't exist, and all you religious people are idiots. All it was is just a preaching screed. He didn't really offer much in the way of evidence. So...
Okay.
Okay, Clara. Go. You
all
go,
right.
Girl.
Thank
all
you.
Right. Thank you, honey. Yeah, I left the church. I left the church for 10 years, way back. And I had to know. I had to look at it. I had to read. I had to think, okay, faith must be reasonable. It's not blind. You don't just say, well, I just believe. Why? Because I got an emotion that says so. No, there is evidence there, and it's powerful. If you're still there, Clara, tell him to look up Eucharistic miracles. Tell him to look up the incorruptibles. Tell him to look up Fatima. It's a lot. Tell him to look up the Shroud, shroud.com. Walk with God. He'll show you. If you ask him, he'll show you.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.